Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker, and we appreciate all you listeners coming out and spending some time with us this morning. Today, we have a couple of guests from Right Choice, and we're going to get to them in just a second. Biz Rocket Radio is a show that gets an opportunity to learn from executives and business owners here in the Atlanta area. Getting an idea of some of the experiences that they've had, both challenges and successes. And today we have Tim Morrison and Betsy Ray Miner from Right Choice. And we want to thank them for taking some time and coming in today.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
So, Tim, tell me a little bit about your background and how you started Right Choice.
My background is 25 years in parish ministry or a variety of ministries, and I just got tired. A lot of clergy would say they burned out. I was beyond burned out, and I knew that I needed to do something else. And I actually played at several different jobs before going into Right Choice Services. And actually, I did not found the company. I joined it as an independent contractor. The founder of it, Janet Litherland, started it in 1995 so that she would have something to do as she took care of her disabled husband. Janet was also my high school chorus teacher many years ago.
We won't date that. We'll just leave that one alone.
Yeah, right? But when I approached her, I said, could I join you? Her response was, well, I'm going to retire in a couple of years, so I would hate to get you started and then not have anything be there. And I said, but I could buy it from you. He said, oh.
Oh, now I understand.
And so that's exactly what we did. I went to work with her as an independent contractor when she decided to retire. I bought the company.
And the rest is history.
Exactly.
So you were in clergy. You were up there on the pulpit giving Sunday mass, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
whole nine yards, yeah. Huh? So I guess you wrote a lot back then, huh?
Well, the way that's right. That's what I tell people. For 25 years, I wrote a weekly essay.
That's right.
The business world accepts essays, sermons, nah. And, you know, I joke when I'm out talking that people figure the only thing clergy know how to do is talk forever and shake people down for money. But that's not a bad trait to bring to business, you know?
That's right. It goes hand in hand.
Yes, it does.
That's right. So, Betsy, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I started out as a newspaper reporter, did that first, and then I moved into a marketing and communications job. So, unlike Tim, my background mainly consists of writing and editing. I don't have preacher experiences to draw upon. But
he hasn't taken you up there and shown you what it's like to give Sunday Mass?
Not yet.
No? But it's coming, right?
Maybe.
Maybe. You could write it. Now, can you speak it? That's the question. Can you deliver it with power and
probably not as well as Tim could.
All right. So maybe you write it and he maybe you guys go back into business for that. You know, you
maybe
can write
so.
It. He can deliver it.
What a concept.
See, there you go.
After doing the marketing and communications work, I started freelancing about 4 years ago, and I joined up with Tim and Right Choice Services about, a year and a half ago, and we've been working together ever since.
And what kind of work are you focusing on? I know that Well, tell us a little bit more about the business. We haven't really gotten to that much. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Right Speak Services?
When Janet founded it, she did two things. She wrote resumes, and she edited the writings of people who were creating books. So we, of course, I kept that going when I took over the company. But I've expanded it. When I was first the company, when someone would say to me, can you? Yes. They didn't have to go any further. It was just yes, because I wanted to make things happen. Then Betsy came along, and she brings a whole different set of skill sets to the company. And so the answer still remains yes, but she does other things. I focus on the resumes and helping people write books. Betsy handles creating website content, auditing website content, doing newsletters. You've crafted brochures. Mm-hmm. You're actually working on helping the PR person for a school in Atlanta to do better. We really now have emerged to be a full-service writing company.
Well, let me touch a little bit on one of the topics you brought up there with resume writing. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly with all the people that are going through transition right now, that's got to be a pretty hot topic.
It is. It is. And we've actually trained. I have another independent contractor who takes care of most of that resume writing. But I think you would understand, since my focus is writing books, helping people write books, when we create a resume, we craft it to tell their work history as a story, call it a corporate story, so that we focus in on what are their strengths and really showcase what they've accomplished. And it's fun doing that.
It doesn't sound like that's your typical resume that you pull off the book and
that
pull
is
off
correct.
The shelf. Kind of.
You know, in the business world, you talk about a chronological resume, and then there's the functional resume. And what we create is a combination of those two. It shows some function, but it also is chronological, but we consistently lift up. Well, the buzzword today is core competencies, but we don't make a list, a table of them. We show them in the context of the resume.
Boy, that's got to be a service that's in high grade. Now, is a lot of your work right now in that area or more in the book side?
Mine is the book side. Jamie Bailey, who does the resume, she's working on a whole bunch right now, and I keep getting more referrals to give to her. And Betsy, you're up to what?
Well, I don't know. All kinds of things, but mostly focused on business clients.
Right. So helping with the websites, mm-hmm. and content there and telling a story, I would imagine the same kind of thing as either a book or a resume, but just in a different venue.
Sure.
Yeah. What has been the biggest faux pas that people have in their website? I mean, what do they really need to look at and go, you know, this really needs to change? You look at it on a regular basis and go, oh, yeah, here's that other mistake. It's always made.
I tend to see a lot of mistakes, Y-O-U-R instead of Y-O-U apostrophe R-E and things like that. They're easy
issues,
to make,
yeah,
and
yeah.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
I see that a lot.
So the little things, they're going to pop out to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're writing it, you're thinking, well, my message is getting across.
Right.
But they get stopped, like someone's reading it, and they're going, what, are you, you know, third grade educated? What is that? Is that kind of what you're seeing?
Those are the kinds of things that jump out at me.
What about content on the websites? I mean, what's the flow need to be? What's the message need to be typically?
It depends on who the audience is. A website always needs to speak directly to the customer the company is trying to get a hold of. So it just kind of depends, but a good rule of thumb is to make sure you tell them a little bit about the company, a lot about what you can do for the client, and make sure they know how to get in touch with you.
Is there much research that has to go into that on your side of the coin, or really are you just taking whatever they're saying and kind of crafting that into words that flow better?
Some of both. We like to know what competitors have on their websites and the kinds of things that they're talking about and saying. That helps make a client's website a little bit better. And then also taking the messaging they already have and tweaking it to make it better.
So on the website information, is mm-hmm. that something that changes a lot? Are the people updating their websites on a regular basis?
It can.
Are they calling you back in, or is it really just
it
a one-time
thing? many times it's just a one-time thing. Occasionally, I've had clients where they've been in business for a while and they've added a new product or service, and so that warrants a new web page or an addition to a products and services page. But many times, if they're up and running, they can stay that way for a while.
Perfect. And now back to books, because I'm always curious about this whole book writing thing. Is that a big business right now? Are a lot of people looking at either writing their first books or maybe even adding to their library of books that they've written?
I'm betting on it.
And I'm trying. And you're diversifying with resumes and
you got
websites,
that
right?
Well, see, the whole thing that we try to do is everything we do in the company deals with a voice, and are the people presenting the voice that they think they are, and that's how Betsy gets triggered on websites. We ask them, what do you think you're saying? And then we read through it and evaluate what we hear and compare that. With the book writing thing, you know, the story I like or the image I like to use is we all think we have a book, and we tend to say, I think I'll write a book someday.
Right.
John, you've probably been in those settings where you're just talking and everybody's enthralled, and when you get done talking, someone will say, John, you ought to write a book.
Yeah, absolutely.
And usually people will say, well, I think I will someday.
Right.
Well, I tell people I'm there someday. I make that happen. I help them make that happen. Entrepreneurs, business people, business leaders, I am convinced, should write a book, because in their book they can share what it is that they do, what's the unique perspective that they bring to their business, what sets them apart. So it becomes a very powerful marketing tool. And of course, then there are the people who just want to write their life story or the story about a great-grandmother, right?
Right.
Which is what she did.
Is that what you wrote a book on?
Well, I did. It's not really a book, I guess. In graduate school, that's what I chose to write for my thesis.
Your great-grandmother?
Mm-hmm.
She was alive while you were alive?
She was. She lived until I was about, let's see, I was 26 when she died. So we had a lot of time together.
Wow. Yeah, that's a long time to have a great-grandmother.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's use this as an example. So you've never written a book before. You've really never written anything maybe as extensive as that. What was the hardest part for you in getting that going? I mean, clearly it's a little different because at school you got to do it, right?
Right,
so
I had to do it.
It was a deadline, right?
The graduation looming in front of me was motivation. I guess what was difficult about it was that, of course, I could draw upon some of my own experiences, having had some years to spend with her, but she was 100 when she died, so
wow.
3/4 of her life I wasn't around for.
Right.
So I had to ask a lot of questions and do a lot of research and reading to recreate some scenes from her life that I wasn't there for.
That
it was a challenge, but it was a lot of fun.
That must have been so much fun.
It was.
Here's somebody that you've known for all your life.
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously been a central figure for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to go back and learn about the 75 years. That
yes.
That, I mean, 75.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That is very cool. So, Tim, when you're looking at working with budding authors, mm-hmm. what is the thing that's driving them? I mean, a lot of people say, like you said, they want to have a book, but when do they finally go, yeah, I'm going to do it?
It depends upon what they're coming from. If they're coming from a personal experience and they're wanting to tell their life story, if you will, they're convinced that the world needs to hear their life story, and that's fine. You know, the memoir kind of thing, what did I learn? Business people tend to come to it from a perspective of establishing their authority. If you've written a book, the assumption is you're an authority, and you are. You're an authority in that about which you've written. So they'll come to me, and I have to discern which approach we're going with first. But regardless of what perspective they're taking, there are always three things that I ask of them. The first thing is I want a 150-word synopsis of what the book is going to be about. Secondly, I want to know who their target market is. And then thirdly, I want, I call it a table of contents, but what I really want is to see what are the 5, 6, 7, 10 topics they plan to address in the book. And once I get that and I work with them to really be specific, then we've got something to work with and we can start writing.
And you're doing most of this is all one-on-one or over the phone?
Yes, it's one-on-one, over the phone, via the internet. Right now I have clients in Oregon, Washington State. I deal with a friend of mine in Ghana, West Africa, so they're all over.
All right. Are most people here in Atlanta? Does that help
no.
to be here? No.
No. I have a lot of clients locally, but really they're spread out across the country.
Cool. Well, with technology today, really,
it's fun. Yes,
it's no
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, who are your clients typically? Are they first-time writers, or are they somebody who are going back and just trying to do a better job with their second writing?
My primary client is a first-time writer, but I'm also getting some who have written books and realize that they probably should have had a writing coach when they wrote their first book, and
right.
so they're getting one now to help them tighten it up.
Right. So when you're first working with somebody, how does it go? I mean, someone comes in and calls you up and says, Tim, I need to write a book. I need some help. What do they go through? What's the process?
With me, we go back to what I shared. Usually they say, this is the title of my book, and this is what it's going to be about. And I say, well, that's good. Let's call that a working title, just in case we change it along the way.
Right.
And are you sure that's what you want to write about? Folks will say, yeah, it is. But what it comes down to is that they'll really have four or five topics. And what we need to do is get focused on what is the one topic, and probably everything else is going to be a chapter in that book. So I have a process that we use to help them identify what is going to be the theme of the book, and then we go from there.
Is that take? How long does that take to come up with the direction?
It depends upon how intentional the person wants to be. It can be done in an afternoon. It can be done literally within 20 minutes if they take the process seriously and apply it. And then we're underway.
Okay, so now you got the idea, and what's next?
The next thing I have them do is to write the 150-word synopsis. Now, if you go into any bookstore or grab a book off the shelf in your house and you turn it over on the back cover, there's 150-word synopsis. Most seasoned authors write that when they're done because now they know what they've said. I have my clients write it up front so that they know where they're going.
Right.
It's always subject to change, but right. at least they know where they're going.
Right.
The second thing is to establish the target market. Now, in business, this is critical because you can't do business with everybody. You have to know to whom are you working. And I do that with writers, too, because you need to know to whom you're writing so you use appropriate vocabulary, appropriate images, and what have you. That's probably the biggest struggle because writers want to say, anyone who, and if they start with those two words, I say, no, I don't let them go any further. I've had people say, well, I'm writing to women from the ages of 14 to 30, and my response is, no, you're not. The vocabulary needs are different. The life perspective is different. So we have to get that down tight so that they know how to write and where to write.
Are you seeing more books that people are writing that are factual in nature or memoirs, like you talked about, versus something that's maybe fiction or a story-related type of a book?
I have no fiction clients myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons I'm glad Betsy's a part of the team, because she engaged in what we call creative nonfiction, and she has a much better feeling for fiction writing.
Right.
A lot of the stuff replies, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, but all of my clients right now, and I'm thinking that's the silence you hear, but...
It wasn't all silent, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, they're all writing factual about their business. I have two people that are writing about their memoirs,
putting a family history together, kind of like
yeah.
Betsy did with her great grandma.
Yes.
And when somebody's done, right, and they've got their book and it's mm-hmm. and it's all squared away and they've crossed the T's and dotted the I's and made sure that the yours and not yours. How do you get published? I mean, how do you get this stuff into bound books that actually gives you
so
that credibility?
It's really a book.
Yeah.
That's one of the first questions people ask of me, actually. And so I share that with them right up front. And there are essentially two ways to be published. And one is as a traditional writer, a traditional publishing company, you know, the big boys and girls out there, or self-publishing. And there are a lot of self-publishing companies. In the first one, you don't get paid. You don't have to pay to play. With the self-publishing, you pay to play. There are two factors that are similar regardless of how you get published. One is you get the opportunity to buy your book in order to market it. So whether you self-publish or go with a traditional publisher like Harcourt or any of those, you have to buy your own books back. And the other one is you have to do the marketing. And that's the thing that shocks a lot of people. They figure if they're going to go with a main press that they're going to run the marketing. Oh, no, they're not. Mm-mm.
You need to be beating the streets out there to get the word out, right?
Exactly. So what it comes down to is how fast do you want the book out there and how much money do you want to make on the book? Because if you go with traditional publisher, it will take from the time you're done writing until it appears in your hand can be anywhere from 18 months to 2 years.
Holy mackerel. Really?
Yeah. Self-publishing, you can have it out there maybe in 3 months or less. If you do traditional publishing, you get a royalty, and the standard royalty is 8% on the price that the book sells for, not the market price.
Right. What it says on the back of the jacket, that's not it,
because when the book is sold off to a bookstore or to Amazon, it's usually sold at a 50 to 55% discount. So if your book is priced at $20, then someone else is going to buy it for $9. So instead of getting $1.60 royalty, you're getting 72 cents.
Right.
If you self-publish, usually a standard price we throw out there is it costs about $3.50 to print a 100-page book, more or less. And then you can sell that for whatever you want. So if you pay $3.50 a copy and you turn around and sell it for $14.95, you've made $11.40, basically.
Right.
Right now, you know, no wait.
Yeah, but then you got to get it out there. But then again, you're doing that anyway, right?
Exactly. I mean,
the only thing that they're doing is they're publishing. And with the technology now, you've got all the Kindles and the mm-hmm. you know the electronic books. What about e-books? What about not having to actually go to print?
You can get away with that. In fact, most of the self-publishing companies will offer those as a part of a package. They'll create an e-book for you. They'll put it into a format for a Kindle or for a Nook or for whatever else is out there. You can pay to get them to put you on Amazon. You get a menu of services that you can purchase.
So you're going to an organization that's designed to help people that are trying to self-publish.
Exactly.
Okay. So instead of going to a group that they're going to take basically over the book, they're going to deal with the printing and so on and so forth, but you're going to deal with the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like kind of a raw deal, if you ask me.
Yeah, but that's the reality.
It's the way it works, right? It's kind
that's
of like
right.
the music industry is kind of like that.
Exactly.
Too, right?
And you know, if you self-publish, you control more of the marketing, actually, and you can have an impact. If you go with a traditional publishing house, you still control the marketing, but you get a greater return by self-publishing. So, you know, it comes down to how fast do you want it out there, how much money do you want to make on it.
Yeah. Yeah, and is a publishing organization, a company that would do all that for you, is it going to make it that much easier for you? I mean, they're taking care of pretty much everything except you got to pretty much go out there and sell the books, right?
Mm-hmm. That is correct. If you self-publish, you establish a better relationship with the people. Traditional presses are you're one of many, but even in the self-publishing industry, and there are probably 100, 125 of them. There are some good ones, there are some really good ones, and then there are some that you probably don't want to deal with.
Right, right. And you know those groups, I would imagine.
I have a rough idea. Yes, I do.
So when you get right down to the marketing side, so now the book is done, it's written, it's published somehow, yours or somebody else published. What kind of time frame, what kind of time do people need to be thinking about if they're going to get out there and go sell a book?
You need to be marketing it before it goes out, and you begin to put on your signature of your emails, author of the forthcoming book or soon-to-be-released book.
Right.
You do pre-publication marketing so that people who sign up now will get a discounted price. The reason you do that is ideally you'll get enough people signing up to pay for the printing of it, actually.
Of it, right?
Yeah. So you start right away.
And when do people go back to the rack where they say, I've written my first book, that's been a fairly good experience, now I'm going to go for my second one?
Some people quit with number one because they think, well, that's what I've done, and it...
Now I'm an author.
Published author, right? That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And there's a big sigh of relief. I've written a book.
Checked off my list, right?
There you go. The bucket list. The bucket list.
Smaller than it needs.
Some of us never learn. I've written four books, and I'm looking at five and six right now. And it just, it's what we have, the feeling inside, it's time to go back and try again.
Yeah. So, I mean, you just love doing it. You've got something inside of you want to get out.
Yes.
You want to be able to tell that story, and, mm-hmm. and the book is the avenue to do that.
Yes, and that's really what it comes down to. You know, even as a minister, I was trying to help people find their voice, find their strength, you know, be a strong, good person. And when I work with writers, it's helping them find their voice and be able to put out there what they feel, what they want to be about.
If you've gone through this... this whole process, and obviously you've done a lot of work to take the company Right Choice to where it is right now,
mm-hmm.
And obviously there's a lot of people out there doing this kind of thing, trying to help people write books or get published or, mm-hmm. or deal with. Although the combination is interesting in being able to come to one organization to do all the kind of writing stuff for you, right? That's kind of unique.
That's what we like to think. Yes.
So. Tell us a little bit more about what sets you guys apart from the competition in the industry.
We listen, and I know everybody says, yeah, well, we listen too, but we really work on helping the individual find what their voice is. That's critical in writing a book. It's hard to define, but you know, people will gravitate. There are people who like John Grisham because of the way he writes. That's his voice. There are others that don't want to go anywhere near it. So we help them find that voice so it expresses themselves in everything that they do, so that there's a consistency in theme, a consistency in message. And so we listen to hear what they think they're saying. We evaluate their written stuff to see if it says the same thing. And ideally it should. If it doesn't, we'll point out how that is and help them get to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. I've got to go back to this whole transition that you went through from the ministry into this. I work with a lot of clients that are trying to make transition, and aside from the fact that this was an interesting transition in of itself, it was a transition.
Yes, it was.
What did you find most difficult and most rewarding in going through this experience that you've had?
The most difficult was trying to get credibility as a business person. Again, we joke about it, but it's a reality. Ministers don't know business. Ministers don't know this, that, or the other thing about the real world. I think that's a fair statement for the majority of clergy, unfortunately. I mean, I experienced it, but not all. My dad was an independent business person, and he made real sure that his little boy knew business stuff before he went into ministry. And so that was the biggest challenge, to help people understand that I understood concepts of business.
Mm-hmm.
The joy that I had in the transitioning was no committee meetings. And if I wanted to, I could stay home and drink coffee and read the newspaper on Sunday morning. I didn't have to be in church. So I got to see what the rest of the world was doing.
The choices that they actually had.
The choices
had, right?
were there. Wow. Yeah, it was sweet.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Oh, well, I can actually go away if I really wanted to, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I did, you know, I held two or three different jobs before I really took hold of Right Choice. I was what was called a naturopathic counselor for a medical clinic and a chiropractic clinic, and my task was to identify the spiritual and emotional issues underlying the patients as they came in. What were those factors, and help and work with the doctor, the chiropractor, whatever, to help them get back onto healing. And then I was a hospice chaplain for 2 years, and then I said, you know, this is ministry.
That's a tough one.
I'm on call.
Yeah.
I left this.
Yeah.
And that's when I immersed myself into Right Choice.
Yeah. And interesting that you you took that skill that you had obviously developed nicely in the ministry and put it into business practice.
Yeah. Well, in fact, John, what I do in my book, Writing Secrets, Essential Steps to Discover How to Start, I have taken a process that has been within the church circle since the 12th century and used that with my clients to help them get focused on what they want to write. That's why I could say, as I did earlier, if you go about this seriously in 20 minutes or less, you can know what your topic is.
Because you need to do that week to week when you're doing
yes,
sermons, right?
Yes, I do.
And that's kind of wrapped up in your book.
Yes, it is. And what I do, how my book I see stands apart from all the other how to write books is, the how to write books assume you know what you want to write. My work with my clients tell me that I know that they have an idea of what they want to write. So working with me and working with my book, I help them get that clarity, and then they can go wherever they want. If they want to use another book, another coach, another whatever, but I get them started.
Yeah, that is seems to be the hardest part. Like you said, people have this thought in mind that someday that's kind of a neat topic, but I'm not really sure if it's going to be this way or this way
exactly.
or this way, and they just got to find continuity and direction.
That is correct. Mm.
Okay, so I want to wrap up with the last question, and normally I ask for a pearl of wisdom, but I want to direct this pearl of wisdom because I think there's lots of different ones, and I'm going to get you two. Okay.
Oh, so you get you a chance. You
can
to
prepare.
Warm up.
Okay.
Yeah. You can
good.
Prepare. All right? But Tim, I want you to think about people that are going through transition because there's so many executives out there and people that are thinking about becoming business owners or taking more of an independent stance in what they do. What would your pearl of wisdom be for those people that are embarking on that journey?
I would recommend to do what I did, and that was literally use the book What Color Is Your Parachute and do the pencil and paper things that are in there, because that again is what I did 12 years ago. And those simple list this forced choice priority, when I got all done, it was very clear to me that there were three things that I could do that I hadn't thought of, and there was a process to go about researching those and investigating them. And that made all the difference in the world to me.
Hmm. Again, it goes back to that focus, knowing what it is that you want to be able to do and how you approach that process.
And the process also showed me other things that I hadn't thought about that were tangential that I could do. And I gave a stab at all of them and wound up with the writing one, which was the one that I least anticipated and it had the greatest reward.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, Betsy, you're up. So I'm going to give it a more broad option
okay.
for you. So pearl of wisdom to people that are out there that are kind of working through the process. What would you say that would be a good thing for them to focus on?
Do you mean a transition process like what you asked him?
It doesn't need to be. I'm not going to restrict you to Tim's
area.
It could be in writing. It could be in anything.
Okay.
From your experience, what do people need to be focusing on to get better?
I think good readers make good writers. So if you can find things that you like in other people's work, it can help you improve your own. That's one. Another good way, if you're thinking about writing, is to keep a journal. Write down thoughts and ideas that come to you, and later on, if you're ready to start writing but you can't think of something good, you've got something to go back and look at.
All right. Perfect. Well, I thank both of you guys for taking the time out today to come out on the show. And if somebody wants to get in contact with you to get some coaching and some direction on that whole writing process, what's the best way to get in touch?
Best way to get in touch is email me, Tim, T-I-M, at write, W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com.
Okay. And I would assume they can get to
mine's you. Almost the same. It's Betsy at writechoiceservices.com. And Betsy is B-E-T-S-Y.
All right. Well, perfect. Thank you guys again.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, we appreciate you taking the time out to learn about getting to be a better writer. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.